amend street vacation ordinance to replace certain conditions and add conditions applicable to the vacated portion of Southwest Madison Street between Southwest 10th Avenue and Southwest Park Avenue for the Rothko Pavilion at Portland Art Museum.
Colleagues, before we begin today's session, Commissioner Udaly has been previously excused from this session. She asked if we could start the session by having her Chief of Staff, Marshall Runkel, read a statement into the record.
Steve, you can stay there. He'll just...
Mr. Janik, stay right there. You can just slide that mic right over. And Marshall, if you could just slide the mic over.
Thank you, Mayor. For the record, I'm Marshall Runkel. I'm the Chief of Staff for Commissioner Udaly. So I'm going to read this in the first person, but it's Chloe speaking. I apologize that I could not attend the hearing today. I'm in Washington, D.C. on city business. I will listen to the entire hearing before voting on this issue next week. I supported introducing this measure because it provides a pathway forward for the Portland Art Museum's proposed addition. To be clear, the City Council is not considering a specific development proposal today. It is simply amending the terms of a previously granted street vacation. The alterations to the terms of the vacation that are being considered today will preserve public access through the vacated area during the hours that our previous City Council set, 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. Bike riding is not allowed on sidewalks in most of downtown, so the amendment will not affect access currently allowed by bicyclists. If the amendment is approved, people with bicycles and pets will still be welcome to travel through the area. If this amendment to the vacation is approved, it will enable the Portland Art Museum to submit a formal development proposal. The proposal will be subject to a detailed technical analysis and will offer opportunities for public consideration and input. In addition to that process, I've asked the Portland Art Museum to consult with the Commission on Disability about its proposal to make the buildings as welcoming and accessible as possible. I'm a strong believer in the principles of universal design. Designing buildings to be accessible and inclusive to the full spectrum of abilities benefits all users. If the City Council approves this amendment to the street vacation, I'll commit to working with city staff, the Portland Art Museum, the Portland Commission on Disability, and the public to ensure that the needs of our entire community are thoroughly considered during the development review process.
Thank you, Marshall. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Colleagues, the Portland Art Museum has a long history of providing access to arts and culture and acts as a regional hub for our community. As many of you know, I have not been shy about saying I am very excited about this opportunity to expand the museum and provide better access. I want to thank the Portland Art Museum for taking the time to thoughtfully respond to the testimony that was received previously, and I understand you're going to be sharing some of the results of your efforts today, and I want you understand that I am grateful for the additional time that you took to find compromises and react to that testimony. I'm particularly pleased that ADA access can be made much better than it currently is, and that you've agreed to extend the hours to ensure that the community can still use the existing public easement. With that, I'd like to pass this on to Commissioner Saltz. Commissioner?
Thank you, Mayor. And thank you to everyone who is here today on this important item. As we all know, the Portland Art Museum is engaged in an effort to stitch their two buildings together and create a much more accessible art viewing experience for the public. And to that end, they need clarity from the city on whether they can enclose the 8-foot easement currently in place between their two buildings. The ordinance before us today does that. In April, when I first brought this item to council, I was clear with the museum that it would be controversial and cause concern about access for many members of the public. And that did indeed come to fruition. And I pulled the item back to my office as support for the idea was tepid at best. In the ensuing months, the museum has done a great job of taking what they heard at that April hearing, as well as listening and reaching out to members of the public, and have come forward with an amended proposal that includes extended hours of operation for the Rothko Pavilion from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m., 7 days a week. And the museum is also clear that all members of the public are free to access the easement, regardless if they are walking their dog or walking their bike. So without further ado, I will turn it over to the museum and let them give us a brief overview of the plans. We do have, at Council's disposal, we have Caitlin Reff from PBOT, Portland Bureau of Transportation, to answer questions, and also Matt Grum from my office as well. And without further ado, we can turn it over to the museum.
Thank you.
Matt. Mayor Wheeler, City Councilors, I'm Pat Ritz, and I am the current chairman of the Board of Trustees.
Pat, can you hold up for one moment? I'm not sure we're coming through there.
One more down.
Great.
Yeah, right there.
And just move a little closer.
I got it.
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind starting over so we can get the closed captioning.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Pat, your time is up, but thank you for being here.
Mayor, councilors, I'm Pat Ritz, and I am chairman of the Board of Trustees of the Portland Art Museum. I have been, and my family has been involved in the art museum since day one, 1892. Now, I'm not that old, but my ancestors were around in those days. One of them was one of the citizens of Portland that started the Portland Art Association, as its previous name was, in 1892. My grandmother's sister, Henrietta Failing, was the first director of the museum in its first 16 years. Many of my relatives have served on the board. Much of the family wealth resides within its walls. I tell my kids that if they want to get a touch and a flavor of the wealth of the Failings, go to the Portland Art Museum and observe some of the 700 objects. I will say that my parents always told us that set of lawn furniture in the backyard is what they got out of the Failing estate. In the period between 1932 and 1970, as the art museum grew from 22 paintings and 133 graphic arts to thousands, the museum had to be expanded. It was expanded in 1932, 1938, and 1970. To house not only a growing collection and growing services, but also an expanding art school. I came on the board in 1994, and during my tenure on the board, we have already done three major renovations. One dealt with redoing the space that the art school, which was then known as the Portland, Pacific Northwest College of Art when it separated from the museum in 1994. So we did a major expansion then. We also, in the early 90s, acquired the Masonic Temple. And in the early 2000s, it became necessary to expand the museum into that space as we had outgrown room for administration and also gallery space. And that project was completed in 2005. So here we are in 2017, and we have some of the same issues that have dogged us over the last 25 years, and that is our collections keep growing, our attendance, which this year will be 350,000 people, including highest monthly number of 50,000 in November, and of the 350,000, fully 100,000 of those are children, which, by the way, if they're under 18, they are able to come to the museum free at any time. But again, we keep acquiring works of art. People keep donating works of art. We now have 50,000 art objects at the museum. And so there's always an ongoing need for more gallery space. And as I know full well, because I participated in the committees that both worked on the funding and the design of these expansions, we were never able to get enough money to do what we really needed to do. And so what we're talking about now is a lot of things in connection with doing things right that we didn't necessarily do right the last time around. The problem with the connectivity and accessibility is a big part of what we're talking about today. And Brian will go into the details. In closing, just a couple items. This is a town that is trying to build its business reputation in the creative industries. And if you're going to be a town that professes that, having a viable art museum for the education of its people and to support the creative arts, which these days are of multiple expansions, the days of just oils on canvas are behind us. It's many more things. It fits. This is a tremendous economic engine for the city of Portland, and it's almost entirely funded by private donations. So I'd like to turn this over. Thank you for listening. And to Brian.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Commissioners. I'm pleased to update you today, and I'm so appreciative of your leadership, Commissioner Saltzman, in helping us move this forward. I'm also appreciative of all those in attendance. It's a good sign that people care about their art museum and this cultural community that we live. I'm excited by that. I'd like to show some slides, and if they work. There it is. Okay. Thank you. This is a picture of the Newark Museum in Newark, New Jersey, founded in 1909. It was the museum that gave me my first opportunity to be part of the museum community. I was an intern here, and it eventually led to a job. What this experience taught me is the importance of the role of an art museum in providing a community with hope and aspiration. This museum in Newark provides an incredible anchor for this city, a city that's gone through great turmoil. So when I looked at this opportunity in 2006 to come to Portland, I saw an institution based downtown, integrated within the community, and a museum that had so much potential to generate and gain community access. That was so important to me. And some of the first things we did when I arrived was make sure that children 17 and under are free. We made sure that programs are connecting with a diverse community. In this situation, we can see our partnership with Portland State, the Middle East program there. We've also been making sure that the museum has images and works of art on the wall that reflect the changing demographics of our community and provide further insight into the great world in which we live and the creative energy. I think moving forward, the next thing in our vision, and I think this is working pretty well. It's working okay?
Okay.
The next aspect of our vision is to make sure that our facilities reflect the expansion of access that we've created previously programmatically and also with admission policies. So we've been working to find a solution for physical accessibility issues within this museum for a number of years. We're seeking now approval with a solution that will make access to and throughout the museum better for everyone of all ages and abilities, including those with disabilities. Just to reflect briefly, and I think, Mayor, you touched on this, and Commissioner Saltzman, you did as well. In 1968, the city of Portland vacated the street between Southwest Madison and Southwest Madison Street between Southwest Park and 10th Avenue. That vacation had a few requirements: an 8-foot wide easement to be illuminated, area was to be used as an open mall, and ownership was to be transferred to adjacent properties. In 1984, as you noted already, the ordinance was amended to allow the museum to close off the area between 11 p.m. and 7 a.m.
I could just insert for a moment, though. It actually said that it's a pedestrian sculpture mall for the display of outdoor sculptures, so it's more than just an open mall.
Yes, thank you. I just want to reflect and just show you what we have now at our museum. If you entered or tried to enter the museum at this stage, this is the 1932 building designed by Pietro Belluschi, and you're faced with significant challenges if you have any disability. If you do find the access ramp to the right of the institution's main entrance, you would find it perhaps hidden behind multiple stairs as well as this grade change. If you enter the museum, the access is very difficult, as been noted. But these are just some recent pictures. This is a picture of our two buildings being connected in 1970, and you can see the various stairs. Just last month, we had someone in a mobile device come around this corner and almost went down those stairs, which was quite scary. If you find your way into the Mark Building or the Jubit Center, you're faced with a number of stairs, as you can see here. This is our invitation, and I say invitation somewhat sarcastically because I don't think it's a very inviting experience to go see some of the great masters that we have in our collection. This is the underground passageway to the Mark Building or the Jubit Center. If you find your way to the Jubit Center and the Mark Building, you're faced with a number of stairs throughout, as evidenced by these images. So when we looked at this several years ago and we were thinking about making sure accessibility across the campus and throughout the museum was successful, we had this brief analysis. And this is where we started our plans, and I think this is really telling. This is where the architects and the internal team looked at. We saw the Belluschi Building, which was designed in 1932 and 39, attached to a school in 1970 in yellow, and going across to the Mark Building, which was built in 1927, although renovated in 2005. The orange line going from south to north is really the only connection across the campus, and you see the vertical red lines between the main buildings and also in the Jubit Center, which show the barriers, and those barriers are distinguished by stairs as well as elevation changes throughout the campus. So the goal has always been very clearly, how do we do this? How do we connect across multiple levels? The architects that we work with initially came up with this very brilliant idea that if we can raise the main level floor of the Jubit's wing 4 feet, we would have one ground level floor throughout the campus that would be of one dimension. It would be consistent throughout the campus, and this was a very important aspect of this plan. Also, if we were able to connect through these designs, we would also have one new accessible connection that links the second floor galleries, improving wayfinding and visitor experience throughout the building. Another very important aspect of this project is visible elevators. To easily access elevators from the entry pavilion that connect all floors, and you can see them here. So if you entered, if we were able to create a ground floor structure at the location that we're proposing, when you entered, if you looked left, you could see an elevator, and if you looked right, you can see an elevator. It's a very important component of what we're proposing here, because right now, if you enter the museum, there's no sense of vertical circulation. Also, we've always been very cognizant, and we want to make sure we continue to be very respectful of the ordinance that is, or the easement that's currently in place to allow access throughout the space. So right now, we just have a general idea, an envelope of a building, but are committed to certainly keeping access throughout that space going from the park blocks westward. We're very excited about some of the initial designs and ideas because, as we know, the streetcar stops at our museum to the west. This is very exciting for us, and right now we really want to create an invitation to move into the space, ground floor, one consistent floor plane into the museum as well as into the park. This is very important, and an invitation to the west side of the museum, and that the ability to perhaps energize that part of our campus and that part of the city is really exciting for us right now. This could be an entry also coming from the park block, so we would have two entries, east side and west side. These images are just concept drawings, and these will certainly evolve if we move forward, if we're given the opportunity to continue to have conversations with the community to make sure it meets the community's needs. This is what a space could look like inside. Again, as I indicated, by having one consistent floor plane, our museum is transformed throughout. Our campus is transformed. This would be a space that people can go north, south, east, west, all free of charge. Ultimately, this is our goal. One of the things that I think we weren't able to communicate last time was to show this image in particular. This is a very extensive project. It starts with the loading dock on the left and a new gallery, transferring all the way into new restrooms. You can see right now there are no restrooms on the first floor of the institution. Going into the pavilion that we're proposing, which would have a community commons, an education center, outdoor space. Also moving deeper into the Mark building, creating new gallery space, as well as a new library, which would be moved down to the first floor. More accessible. So it's a very big project. It's a project that reimagines the entire institution. Ultimately, these are some of the goals, moving from south to north across the campus, as well as I mentioned, vertical transportation, visible stairs, visible elevators, to make sure if you entered the facility, you could see how to go across and up and down. This is also important. This is an image that would be a transformed library, perhaps. I show this image because right now, if you go into the Mark building in the public galleries, there are no restrooms. By transforming this space into gallery space, we now have accessible restrooms for this entire wing, which is very significant for a number of reasons. Since our last City Hall presentation, we heard some excellent feedback. I'm so pleased about people speaking up, giving us their thoughts, and I think it's very important for us as a museum committed to the public good to hear that. We are listening, and we continue to listen, but right now we have proposed initially to the city that we would remain open from 7 a.m. to p.m. I must add a little edit there, however. We've heard some additional comments from the community, and I think it would be really exciting for us to align our hours being open in this space to the streetcar hours. So perhaps even expanding those hours, I think that would be significant. And supporting the city's efforts to make sure that public transportation maintains a foundation in our city, and we want to be part of that. We would add security and lighting to enhance the safety of the interior and exterior spaces. We would allow pets and bikes to go through, again, very much part of the fabric of our city and very much important to making sure this museum is ingrained in the fabric of the city. We're working with accessibility and inclusive design advisors to make this one of the most accessible institutions we feel on the West Coast, if not the United States. That's very important to us. Thank you.
So I have a question.
Yes.
And I think I want to state at the outset that everybody loves the Art Museum. I haven't read a single thing or heard a single thing from anybody who said this is a terrible institution, it should just go away. So that said,
Thank you.
Could you go back to the picture, to the image with the streetcar? And the one before that, please. So why, I understand about the elevators on either side. Mm-hmm. Why can't you keep the bottom, the plaza as is, and have the entry, because you're going to be doing a lot of removing of steps, obviously, for the, all of the accessibility reasons you mentioned, which we all support as well. Why can you not have those people being able to enter the art museum from either side, which would then keep the Madison Street area open and free?
Great question. We really want the floor plane to be flat across the space. We also feel that it's really important to be able to move the loading dock and also provide entry space for a lot of our school children, among others, and enclosed space is really important to that.
But you could do that with having the level of that floor. You said you're going to be elevating one side 4 feet.
Yes.
So that doesn't really answer my question. Why could you not have the plaza and then entries to either side clearly showing the elevators?
Right. So, again, I'm not sure completely of the question, but as I think I understand it, we want a central entryway and a space that's enclosed to make sure people can navigate and use our facilities in that space as they enter.
Even if the counter to that is that then it looks like your space rather than everybody's space.
I think our goal is always to serve the public, and now having this free, I think our goal is to make sure, like other museums across the country, have public spaces, either exterior or interior, that can be used for various programs.
I have a question, if I could. As someone who comes to the museum a lot, I have always found the current entrance very confusing. And I am an able-bodied person, but still trying to navigate downstairs, coming up, coming around, and the like. It did seem like a particular defect of the vision for the Mark Building, the lack of connectivity. I can't imagine if someone had some disability or impairment that they also had to navigate. We've been working, Brian, on upgrading all of our restrooms at the city level. And I've gotten a crash course in restrooms. I sort of took the mantle from Commissioner Leonard, who did the loo. And now we're doing restrooms. And we're looking at accessibility. We're looking at things like making sure there's a changing area.
Yep.
And by the way, not just a changing area for a child, but I have a colleague, for example, that has an adult child. And as an adult child that that requires a changing area. And so there are some particular design accommodations. I assume that as part of your accessibility vision, that will translate to the restrooms, and you'd be open to some feedback from our commission and other advocates about how to make those restrooms as accessible as possible?
Yes. A number of the restrooms will be new, so it gives us a great opportunity to create up-to-date spaces for the needs of our community at this stage, and I think that's exciting. And then the older ones, we would certainly look at retrofitting because, again, as the project's quite extensive, it would give us resources to make sure that happens.
Again, just an anecdotal thing, but, you know, we have in a couple of our restrooms just a tiny little space where a parent can put a child and change a diaper, which does nothing for that parent if they have an adult child in a wheelchair that needs some privacy. And that requires a screen and a larger space. So if this thing does move forward, we would look forward to sharing some of what we've learned about accessible restrooms.
Well, I think that's the beauty of this discussion now. I think the museum can learn a lot through this conversation and the feedback from the committees that the city has and some of the insight they have. That would be very important.
Thank you.
So before we move to public testimony, I would like to offer an amendment that would match the hours of operation of the pavilion to those of the Portland streetcar. Hmm. As was just suggested by the director. Let me give those to you, and I'll read the amendment out loud. So it reads, the pavilion will continue to provide ground-level public access and connectivity between Southwest Park and 10th Avenues between the weekday hours of 5:30 a.m. to 12 a.m., Saturday hours of 7 a.m. to 12 a.m., and Sunday hours of 7 a.m. to 11 a.m.
11 p.m.,
excuse me. Access will not be blocked in any manner and will be adequately illuminated for use in hours of darkness.
So I'll second that.
Okay.
So we have a motion.
We have
a second.
Well, I actually also had a motion on that, so maybe you could accept a friendly amendment that it would be 365 days a year.
Okay.
Thank you.
What's the... currently, I thought the proposal was 7 days a week. So what is that? What is 360?
It means that it's, even when the museum is closed, that the easement has to be open. The access needs to be open.
Was that not the original proposal?
Yes, that is. So we're proposing 7 days a week for those hours.
So could you just say 365 days a year
365
as well?
Days a year. Yes.
Thank you.
So somebody who follows the movement of the sun and the moon will note that we've just created a loophole. If we say 365, why don't we just say year-round?
Yeah, there you go.
Year-round.
Very good.
Year one day after fall, you can close it up.
And I assume the commissioner who made the motion and the commissioner who made the second are okay with
can
those.
We, can yes. we just yes. check with our esteemed counsel for a second?
So, Commissioner, is that an amendment then to Section 1, Finding Number 7? Just a point of clarification.
Either that or what I was suggesting to the directors under A.
Yeah, it's my amendment is a replacement for number 7 in the ordinance.
Okay.
That's in the findings, though. We need something in the directions. So I think it's a change to A. in the directions.
So I'm hearing Commissioner Fritz say that she would like that amendment to be both to finding 7 and also additional language to be included in Directive A sub A.
Thank you, Ben. That's okay. That's correct. Thank you.
Sounds good. Yeah.
Commissioner Saltzman, at your discretion, we can either call the roll on this now or keep it open until after testimony.
Why don't we keep it open until after testimony?
Very good.
I'm the last presenter on behalf of the Art Museum. I'm Steve Janik, an attorney at 101 Southwest Main. I have just some brief comments to offer you to put an appropriate legal framework around the decision in front of you. In the public discussion about this, there has been some suggestion that there are some legal policies that may be at issue. So my purpose here is to try to clarify that for you. This is not a land use hearing. It is a hearing simply amending a condition of the original street vacation ordinance passed in 1968. The effect of that ordinance was to make the land in question privately owned, subject to an easement in favor of the city. It is no longer public right-of-way, even though some writers have stated that this action today would do what was already done in 1968. Accordingly, the City Council has unfettered discretion to amend that ordinance as requested by the Art Museum and as amended by the Council. If this was a land use decision, state law would establish and require that you follow several requirements, such as in advance of the hearing, mailed notices to people within so many feet, a specific statement at the beginning of this hearing of the applicable land use criteria, a staff report delivered a number of days in advance. None of those things have happened, correctly so, because this is not a land use proceeding. Nonetheless, some have raised concerns based on a few policies in the June 2017 recommended draft of the central city portion of the draft 2035 comprehensive plan. And I want to address those. First, it's important to note that the new central city plan is not yet legally effective. It won't be until it's been finally adopted by the council and subsequently acknowledged by the Land Conservation and Development Commission. Just the other day, the staff acknowledged that, but it takes a final order of the commission under state law. So none of that has happened. But nonetheless, I want to address the policies that some have raised. A couple of these were raised by Commissioner Fritz's office just recently. One of them is policy 3.6, street diversity, and I'm quoting it. Differentiate the character of key streets to offer a diversity of urban experiences and connections, reflect the character of unique districts, and expand open space and create functions in the right of way where possible. So this policy simply doesn't deal with activities that occur on private land. Rather, it's directed to opportunities that may be illuminated in the future to deal with public rights of way. While it is inapplicable, parts of it, quote, such as unique districts, like the cultural district, and expanding, quote, recreational functions, like a pavilion of art, all of which are consistent with this art museum proposal. The second policy that's been raised is policy 5.8, and again I'm quoting, enhance the character and function of the public realm through design standards, guidelines, amenities, and land uses that activate the pedestrian environment and encourage community gathering. Again, nothing here applies to private property. It addresses the public realm. In addition, the policy is specifically directed to design standards and guidelines and not to any current or proposed regulations. But again, within this policy, it does talk about promoting amenities and land uses that encourage community gathering, such as a clean, well-lit, accessible public space that will be created within the pavilion. There's one or two other policies that are worth noting. Some have commented on these. Policy 5.10, this deals with streets, and it proposes a street hierarchy and a development character for certain streets, and it establishes three categories of streets, one of which is called flexible. The definition in the policy of flexible means, due to their flexible character of these connections, the ground floor responses of adjacent buildings varies considerably. Now, what does all that mean? On page 93 of the urban design concept diagram that shows the area we're talking about today, the easement itself, and it characterizes that as a pathway of flexible character, meaning its relationship to the adjacent buildings is important. That would certainly allow and even encourage the pavilion, given its relationship to the two other art museum buildings, while maintaining that pathway as it is today, but simply enclosed. If you read the entire document, you will find nowhere the assertion in the Sunday letter to the editor claiming that the plan specifically refers to this easement area as a, quote, potential new open space. In the hierarchy of land use regulations, as we all know, the zoning code is to implement the admittedly and appropriately ambiguous policy statements in the plan. So if you take a look at the companion new zoning code that goes along with this framework plan, there is nothing in the new code that would prohibit or limit the proposed pavilion. In more detail, the new code does not change the allowed use, does not change the floor to area ratio, nor does it change the height. Those are all the same as they are today. So finally, again, this is not a land use case. If it were, there are no policies that directly address this site and no policies that would logically prohibit the pavilion. There are no legally effective policies or land use regulations today to apply. And again, the decision to modify the street vacation ordinance is entirely within your discretion, unfettered by those claimed policies. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question. Thank you. Maybe for the city attorney, maybe for Commissioner Fish. It says in the findings that we no longer need a easement for utilities. Number 9 of the findings says that we did have a blanket easement for utilities, and it says the city has no present or future need to locate public facilities in this area. Are we certain that there aren't any utilities, sewers, whatever, underneath the street there?
To our knowledge, there are none.
Okay. So do we need to move that over into the findings, to the directions as well?
Yeah. We have no objection to that.
Just something to think about. Thank you.
Very good. So, Carla, how many people do we have currently signed up for public testimony?
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
66.
All right. So, folks, we have a lot of people signed up. 2 minutes. It would be really helpful if I don't have to stop people. I don't like doing that because I assume everybody is here because they wish to be heard. So I'm going to ask you to be as concise as possible. The way it works is if you just state your name for the record, you do not need to tell us your address. That's not necessary. If you are a lobbyist, we do need to know that per council rules. And we ask everybody to please be respectful of people's opinion. It is a rare day when everybody agrees with everything that is said at these microphones, so assume you will probably hear some views that are different than your own. That's good. That's what we want in a chamber like this. So please, no shouting, no interrupting of people's testimony or the council deliberations. We don't want to have to ask anybody to leave, and I don't anticipate that will be the case. So come on up, name for the record, 2 minutes. The yellow light will start flashing, and there'll be a beep when you have about 30 seconds left. And when your time is up, the red light starts flashing, and when you get about 30 seconds over, your chair electrifies. If you wish to sign up and you have not done so, you can still do that with Carla here at the front. Or the sign-up's still outside, Carla.
I've got it here.
They're right here by Carla's desk if you'd like to sign up and you haven't had a chance to do so yet. Traditionally, we offer folks who have little kids or disabilities or other special needs to please work your way to the front, and Carla will accommodate you quickly at the front of the pack. Otherwise, she'll just call out people's names as they signed up.
So if there's anybody who has a special needs who'd like to come up now, please come on.
Hello.
Hi, how are you today?
Which way do I go?
Very good.
Okay. And then we'll go with the first two people.
I got it.
Are Tom Nelson and Wendy Rahm.
And the table?
Right in front of you. And they'll be followed by Walt Wexler, Suzanne Leonard, and Robert Wright.
Mayor, I just want to observe that I think Wendy should get some kind of award. She got here at 5:30 this morning, camped out, so she could be among the first three.
Not and quite so, that bad, actually. I got daily emails from the museum.
Actually, I
saying earlier and earlier and earlier, so I thought, oh, my.
Well, I'd like at some point for us to go to a system where you can come early and just get a number so we don't make people stand
it
in
would
line.
Be wonderful.
It seems to me we could do that and then allow you to go for 2 hours to go get a meal or something and keep your place. I hope that's something we could consider.
You know, that's great. Or alternatively, we could at least provide pancakes.
I'll take
very,
both.
Very good. So would you like to go first, please? All the
me?
Way at the end? Yes, please. Thank
okay.
you.
Hello, commissioners and mayor. I don't know if you recognize me. I am a member of the Portland Commission on Disability. However, today I'm here to represent myself. I'm very excited and pleased to hear all of the possible improvements that the Art Museum is proposing. I am wondering, I heard a lot about physical adjustments and accessibility measures in this proposal. I am wondering how much has been considered for people who are visually impaired and blind. This pavilion has been open, and if I'm walking up to this pavilion to try to cross, and there's a building there now, what am I going to do? I would not know. I would not see the signs that say welcome. I would not see through the glass. This is a barrier. This is a physical barrier that was not there before. And I feel like all the proposed changes are very, very good, and I am very excited to speak to you guys about that more tomorrow in our meeting in PCOD. I would like to discuss more about the access from a blind person's perspective. Also, if this was closed in, I'm imagining there's going to be a lot of people milling around in this area. If I do happen to find the door that was not there before and go in, it's very difficult for a person with that's blind and vision impaired to get through crowds. So there's going to have to be something that's going to help me get through this crowds or these peoples or even the art sculptures. One last question I have is the timing of this proposal and all these accessibility suggestions. These seem to be coming, and I just hope that it's not being proposed on the backs of people with disabilities. Was this ever considered, all these accessibility changes, were they ever considered before this pavilion was wanted?
Very good. Thank you. And before you leave, could you just state your name for the record? We didn't get it for the record.
Oh. Sorry, my name is Angel Ray.
Very good. And Angel, I don't want to slow this down because there's like still 67 good people testimony. Who want to testify. Thank you for your testimony, and I think it is completely an excellent suggestion that you've raised with regard to the design phase of this. So thank you for making the effort to be here today. Mm-hmm. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Wendy Rahm. Oh, you're next. Sorry.
That's all right.
You go ahead.
My name is Tom Nielsen. My wife and I are strong advocates and patron-level supporters of the Art Museum. We also live across the street from the museum and are keenly aware how important keeping the public passageway across the plaza is. Almost 2 years ago, in April of 2016, I had the opportunity to attend a presentation by the Art Museum of the Rothko Pavilion Project. The plan today is essentially identical to the plan that was presented 2 years ago. At that meeting, and two years ago, and during at least three following presentations with PAM, I, along with others, reinforced how important keeping the public passageway open was and asking that they go back to their Chicago architect and have them develop a Plan B concept that would keep at least an 8-foot wide passageway across the plaza as spelled out in the current easement. Creatively solving a Plan B solution is very doable, but the museum never listened or took the request seriously. There has been no indication that the Chicago or any other architects have been challenged to develop a Plan B concept. Now we are to believe they are listening and that they have decided to allow the public passageway through the glass pavilion between the 7 to 11 p.m. every day, including bicycles and animals. This means instead of staffing the 48 museum hours, open hours per week, the pavilion would need to be staffed 116 hours per week. By simple calculations, assuming two staff would be needed to secure the pavilion and using a very conservative hourly burden rate, keeping the pavilion open as a passageway will cost the museum well over $200,000 per year. Once the glass wall is built across the plaza, how long will it be before the museum comes back claiming hardship and requesting easement revisions? Because assuming the potential issues of relating to animals, bicycles, and passers-through can all be contained and managed, the added expense of securing the pavilion during the extra easement hours will be much greater than presented. I want to support the project but cannot in its current form. I still believe there is a Plan B design that would solve the issues and be less burdensome on the public and the museum. The council should require the museum to pursue an alternative design before approving this project. But if the council wanted to move ahead and approve it today, they should not approve it without reconfirming the easement conditions and making them permanent and requiring a significant level of public education and signage.
Very good. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Hi, I'll try again. I'm Wendy Rahm. I'm a museum donor and supporter. I support the museum's interior concepts and upper floor connections between the buildings, but I do not support the ground floor concept, especially the taking of a public easement without having had an open public process with nearby residents. The museum has listened but not heard calls for a sky bridge to save the passage. Boxes have been checked, that's all. So-called concessions of hours and so forth are red herrings, a distraction away from the ground floor public easement. If council decides today to accept these ordinance changes, it will be a giveaway. It will subvert your constituents by gifting the museum negotiating advantage in future discussions of the ground floor passage. The process has been both rushed and flawed. Even the museum's lobbying firm advised having a stakeholders committee, which should have happened long before coming to today's public hearing. Afterwards is pointless since the giveaway will be done. The cart is in front of the horse. And contrary to assertions of improving accommodations for those in the disabled community, a trip from Park to 10th will be severely degraded. Today, from Park to 10th, the passage has no obstruction, is nearly flat, easy to push a wheelchair. Instead, the proposal forces all to mount a ramp or stairs, pass through one door, through an enclosed lobby with guards, through another door, before continuing to the streetcar stop on 10th. The degradation is confirmed by Matthew Denny and Bob Junepoff, disability rights lawyers. At least recognize that when you cast your vote. Finally, this taking is contrary to the Central City 2035 and Comp Plan's walkability goals that you've approved. The two Madison easements are mapped as key pedestrian ways in the Central City Plan. The Oregonian quoted one commissioner saying, "I'm tired of setting goals and then falling short. So are we." After spending years on Central City and Comp Plans, why disregard the conclusions so quickly? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both. Next three, please.
We've had a request for someone to come up first.
Please, yeah.
And then we'll go with Walt Wexler and Suzanne Leonard. And after them will be Robert Wright, Dan Birksvick, and Judith Marks.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Would you mind starting, please?
Me?
Yes, please. Thank you.
Mary Luce. I'm a resident of 12th and Jefferson. I oppose the ordinance changes. I agree with Wendy's testimony. Because if that whole block were closed off, it would make it harder for people to get around. And, I've lived here since 72, and we've always been allowed to walk through that space without it being considered a trespass. And I worry that it's too much change. I wouldn't mind the floor, the ground, the sidewalk level of it staying and putting a sky bridge above it, which I heard was in the plans. I wouldn't oppose that, but closing the bottom as Wendy described is would put difficulties up to a lot of people, and I don't know what my time is doing. But
about 39 seconds.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll stop now, but thank you for your time.
Thank you for coming in. We appreciate it.
Appreciate
Good afternoon.
Go. You're next. Go.
Okay. Suzanne Leonard, Mayor, Commissioners. I do not object to the museum building a link at the second, third, and fourth floors if the street-level passage through is hospitably designed and kept open. However, I strongly urge City Council not to change the wording of the ordinance that requires Madison Avenue from the parks to 10th Avenue to not be blocked in any manner and to not be used for any purpose other than an open mall. This wording ensures that those of us living on the east side, I live in the Ambassador, elders, people in wheelchairs, people with strollers, and all those with mobility challenges can easily access the streetcar stop, our friends, restaurants, and businesses west of the museum. Portland is renowned as a unique city of small 200 by 200 blocks. This is what makes the city walkable. The streets belong to all the people. It's the responsibility of city government to protect this valuable public heritage and not give it away for private profit. This taking of the commonwealth needs to stop. If you allow the wording of the ordinance to be changed, the museum could, at a later date, decide to close the passageway entirely. For this reason, I strongly urge you not to change the wording of the ordinance that requires this passageway to not be blocked in any manner, and to not be used for any purpose other than an open mall. Thank you for caring about the well-being of your constituents and protecting the public right of way.
Thank
Suzanne,
you.
I'm just compelled to ask one quick question, because you're the second person now who has implied either bad faith or that there's a potential bait and switch going on. And so I just want to better understand that, because the proposal before the council is that we change an easement. That easement could not be changed subsequently without council approval. So what's the basis of your concern that the art museum could unilaterally close the passageway in violation of whatever action the council takes?
Well, I'm asking you not to change the wording that
I understand that, but okay. you've raised the specter of them closing the passage entirely. You're the second person who's done so. So I just want to better understand What's the foundation of your concern that they can take an action contrary to what council has directed?
No, I'm concerned that you do not allow this particular wording to change in the ordinance, because that's what maintains it as open for the public.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Ladies and gentlemen of the City Council, thank you very much for your time, your energy, and your service. It is appreciated. Glad to be here. I'm Walter Weiler, condominium owner and resident in the Portland Art Museum neighborhood. I live in the Elliott. I urge you to approve the ordinance matter before you, however, with the provision that the design, the resulting design of the Rothko Pavilion, include an unblocked open pedestrian easement, that is, a walkway with no doors. The original 1968 ordinance required pedestrian easement not to be blocked and that it be open. This ordinance was an early realization of Portland's determination to be a pedestrian-friendly city. Retreating from these standards would be a regrettable loss. If the Rothko Pavilion includes a walkway with doors, it may well leave a long-term resentment in the neighborhood. However, if an open walkway is included without doors, I predict the project will sustain a groundswell of neighborhood support. That's my one-minute story, and I'm sticking to it.
Very good, sir. Thank you. Yes. We appreciate it, all three of you. Next three, please.
Next three are Robert Wright, Dan Berkswick, and Judith B. Marks.
Good afternoon, sir. Why don't you start, please?
Yeah, I'm Robert Wright. I live in the West End in the Elliott Tower. Mayor Wheeler, commissioners, good afternoon. Stewardship of public property for the common good is your fundamental responsibility as elected officials. Stewardship of a vacated block of Southwest Madison Street was demonstrated in 1968 and again in 1984 by city councils at the time. The street was lightly used by cars, but its sidewalks were very much used by pedestrians. The ordinance ensured pedestrian passage through an open mall, an extension of the South Park blocks. The proposed pavilion provides much-needed above-ground connection of the museum's two main buildings. However, its ground-level design is restrictive, enclosing a space intended to remain an open mall, both in fact and appearance. Stewardship is again needed for what was once a public street. The needs and desires of an iconic, private, wealthy institution must be balanced with the needs and expectations of the public. There is a balanced solution, but the approval process is backwards. Changing an ordinance should come last, based on approved design. The Art Museum seems to be saying, change the ordinance, then trust us to work out the details. An open mall is much more than a detail. First, do not consider changing the ordinance until formal reports on the design received from city bureaus, departments, commissions, and a stakeholders advisory group. Second, request the Art Museum also submit a revised alternative design, one without an enclosed ground level with building entry doors as are now used now, but in every other aspect the same, with elevators in both buildings and glass-walled overarching connecting spans. Accessibility for people of all ages will be improved as intended. Why a walled ground floor is needed is certainly not clear. If the mall is enclosed with hand-open doors for public passage, the pavilion will eventually appear to be a completely private space where the public is allowed to pass through, not an open mall where pedestrian access and passage is guaranteed by right. Your stewardship will be precedent-setting. What public space will be next?
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, commissioners. My name is Dan Bergesvik. My husband and I are members of the Art Museum, and I'm speaking in favor of the proposal. You've all been to the museum. You know that from the outside, it's not very welcoming. If you're a person with mobility issues, like my husband over there, who now has arthritis, it can be a challenge. When you manage to find your way inside and get through admissions, you're immediately confronted with stairways. Given the chopped-up floor plan, it isn't clear which way you ought to go. If you'd like to see the Impressionists or the Modern and Contemporary galleries, good luck. The museum estimates that upwards of half of their attendees never make it into the Mark Building. To get there, you have to go down the stairs, down the hall, down another flight of stairs, down a longer hall, up two flights of stairs, and then you're back where you started on the first floor. And then there are more stairs to get to the galleries where you'd like to go. The proposed pavilion would address these problems. As it stands, the museum is two big brick boxes with no windows, not particularly inviting. The pavilion would allow passersby on Park and 10th to see into the museum and see what's going on. It will be a picture window inviting you inside. My own feeling is that it's somewhat like the Apple Store downtown, which is clear, you can see what's happening, it draws you in. Best of all, the interior layout will be more coherent, and you'll be able to move between the two buildings without changing floors,